You're listening to the From the Hack Curling Podcast, part of the Curling News and Curling Podcast Network partnership. Hello, everyone. My name is Frank Rock, and welcome to the From the Hack Curling Podcast. Today, we are joined by a man who just purchased the Grand Slam of Curling and another who has won 17 Grand Slam titles. Hello everyone, thank you for joining me this week. Once again, my name is Frank Rock. My first guest this week is Nick Sulski, who is part of a new entity called The Curling Group, which recently purchased the Grand Slam of Curling from Sportsnet. Nick joined me to discuss his vision for the future of the Grand Slam of Curling. Nick, your name will not be familiar to some of our listeners. What ties do you have with the sport of curling?
Yeah, well, first off, Frank, thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here. You know, before acquiring the Grand Slams and kind of my journey with the world of curling really started about 3 years ago with my former role as the chief commercial officer for PointsBet, which is one of the biggest regulated sports gaming companies in Ontario. We did the very first partnership that I did was with Curling Canada. So PointsBet became the exclusive partner of Curling Canada. As many of your fans know, with the incredible partnership with Nolan Thiessen, who's now the CEO of Curling Canada. The two of us came up with the PointsBet Invitational, which is now an annual event on the Curling Canada tour. And, you know, the first one was in Fredericton in 2022. And, you know, I think that, or sorry, 2022. Holy cow, time flies. And, you know, it became pretty obvious to me immediately how much opportunity lay in the sport. And I just fell in love with, like, I'm not a curler, but I fell in love with the sport. I fell in love with, most importantly, with the curlers. And yeah, here we are today. It's been a crazy week, man. Tuesday was pretty incredible, you know, joining forces with the incredible folks at Sportsnet and acquiring Grand Slams and, you know, really ready to take the sport and the property to the next level.
How did the purchase of the Grand Slam of Curling get on your radar, Nick? Was there talk in the back rooms about Sportsnet looking to offload the Slams, or did you approach them without knowing if they were interested in selling?
No, I mean, it's, you know, as, you know, as we've said, the Grand Slams weren't for sale. You know, I've had the great privilege to get to know some of the amazing folks over at Sportsnet over the years based on, you know, working in the sports media and content and gaming industry. You know, it's a pretty small world, right? So, you know, I've gotten to know those fine folks over there and we were just, you know, just catching up with a couple of the executives over the summer, you know, having lunch and, you know, and we were talking about the Slams and I'm an if you don't ask, don't get kind of guy, honestly. So, you know, and for lack of another, you know, winter sport analogy, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, right? To quote the great one. So I just asked them, I said straight up, you know, would you guys be interested in selling the Slams? And they said, interesting, right? And the reality is, you know, Sportsnet is an incredible partner. They're an incredible broadcaster. Their focus is Canada. This sport now is a global sport, right? Curling is blowing up in Asia. You know, if you just watch the men's worlds in Switzerland, like that barn was incredible. The energy is incredible. The international curling teams have started to excel. And, you know, it's time for this sport internationally to grow even bigger than it has. And the Slams, you know, we need to use the Slams as a vehicle to spark that international growth. And I think the great folks at Sportsnet and us understood that, you know, the Slams in our hands will allow them to focus on what they do incredible, which is, you know, broadcast content, which is Canada, and it'll allow us to help really focus and work to push this property all over the world, right? And that's kind of our number one goal.
In the article announcing the purchase of the Slams on the Grand Slam of Curling website, it said that the Curling Group is a new venture backed by elite international curlers looking to invest in growing the sport. Does that sentence mean that the players support the purchase, or are there actually players who have invested in the Curling Group?
It's the latter. Like we haven't asked the players to invest. In fact, we want to think our goal, and I've been pretty vocal about this over the last few days, our goal is to get to a point in the near future where curlers don't need to have secondary jobs to support their family, right? We want to inject new revenue and new money-making opportunities into this sport. But to your point, we have the incredible support of some, well, you know, over the last few, you know, last little while, I've been speaking with a bunch of current and ex curlers, including, you know, including John Morris and Jennifer Jones and a number of others. And I think that that line really indicates the support of the curling community. You know, the curlers and I've gotten to know a lot of the Canadian curlers over the years. So I think there's, you know, we have a bit of a relationship, but this is really the first opportunity to get to know some of the incredible curlers from all over the world. And, you know, it's going to be a process, you know, to make sure that, that I earn all of their trust. But I think that that begins with listening. And I've been pretty open and pretty vocal to the curlers. We need to listen. We need to work with them. They have to be at the table. We're going to make changes. I don't know what those changes are yet. I mean, we're like kind of three days in to being in control of the slams. And so we haven't made any decisions yet, but made it pretty clear, like in order to take the sport to the next level, there has to be some change. And from every curler that I've spoken to, they are all for it, and they're eager, and we're going to listen, and we're going to work together to make the best decisions for the slams in the near term and for the sport of curling in the long term.
From a transactional perspective, Nick, did the Curling Group simply purchase the name and the intellectual property from Sportsnet, or do you also get the rocks and some other assets that we might not be aware of?
Well, that's a great. I should ask if we get some rocks now. I mean, when you think about, and, you know, I can't get into too many of the details, but it's not just, you know, when you think about IP, it's not just, you know, call it logos and things like that, right? And content. It's also, you know, it's YouTube channel, it's social media sites, it's you know, things like that that are, especially in this day and age, have massive you know, value opportunity for us to grow. So it's not just the brand. It's obviously we now are going to be running and owning all of the events, right? That comes with a significant responsibility, but also with significant upside. We think we're going to be able to, you know, we think we're going to be able to inject an amazing energy into the events and into the shoulder content. And I've been using that word a lot. And shoulder content, we don't think of it just as, you know, content that you film. It's, you know, it's content that fans get to experience live, right? Whether it's concerts, whether it's experiential activations with some of the incredible sponsors we are looking forward to continuing to work with, and sponsors we're looking forward to bringing on. You know, I think that there's a lot of pieces to the Grand Slam puzzle that isn't just, you know, as you say, the logo and IP.
One reality of curling, Nick, is that the core curling audience is aging, and little has been done over the years to attract a younger demographic, specifically in connecting with those audiences where they spend their time on social platforms such as TikTok and Instagram. Will the Curling Group encourage teams and individual players to be more active on social platforms, given that this is where they can most easily access these new demographic groups, the ones that will form the next generation of curling fans and the ones that will be leaned upon to support the Slams and the Curling Group in this next era for the Slams?
Oh, those conversations have already started, right? And I will say that my partner and co-founder, Mike Cotton, his background is on building and monetizing content across social media networks, you know, TikTok, Instagram, you know, Snapchat, YouTube, all of it, right? At the end of the day, you can't just, it's not if you build it, they will come, right? We need to produce more content. We need the curlers themselves to embrace short form content. You know, I keep saying this, but a rising tide lifts all boats. We are all in this together. And there are already some incredible people within the curling world. That some of your listeners may be familiar with, Ryan Fry and Jess Abo, who are really pioneering kind of the digital media content vision for what the sport can become with a number of the teams that they work with. And we have an incredible strategic advisor who's a very prominent member of the North American TikTok business. And so you nailed it. We need to fish where the fishes are, right? And goal number, the biggest thing the curling world needs is an injection of younger fans, right? And what the way that we can get to them is through those social channels. And the way to get to them is through engaging content. And that's job one and job two, right? Is we as the curling group and the curlers themselves need to all work together to, produce content that will allow us to shine a light on how incredibly engaging, how incredibly smart, fun, funny, relatable the curlers themselves are, because we need a star system, right? And these curlers are so marketable and they're so compelling, and we need to give them the tools to leverage all of those channels, for them and alongside us.
To be honest, Nick, I think teams in the sport in general would benefit from having much more authentic content on social platforms. You're not going to attract new fans with posts about game results or sponsor shoutouts. You just won't. The teams and players need to become better storytellers and allow the audience behind the curtain a little bit if they want to attract and maintain a new generation of fans. Perhaps not in the way that F1, golf, and tennis have done it with their Netflix series or even NFL with Hard Knocks, but authentic content that will help attract and sustain a younger, more diversified audience. I think that's one of the keys that is often overlooked by teams and players these days.
Authenticity is the most important thing. And I am, I like to lead by example, and the reality is there's no bullshit. I put all the cards on the table all the time, right? And I always will. And to your point, being able to provide curlers with the opportunity to be themselves is going to be the best way we sell this sport. Being able to shine a light on what this sport is behind the scenes is one of the most important things. The event of curling itself, I actually think, is kind of the least important thing for us to think about. We need to really shine a light on what it's like to be a member of the incredible curling community, to be a curler. And to your point about, what we've seen around content in some of the other sports like, F1, golf, tennis, around the docu content structure, that is absolutely on the table. It's all on the table. We are going to be investing a significant amount of money in this sport. And a good amount of that money is going to be put toward content and growth. And that's the growth marketing. Like that's what we all have to do. And that's what we will do.
Now, the announcement that was made confirms that Sportsnet will retain the Canadian broadcast rights for the foreseeable future for the Grand Slam of Curling. That said, Nick, many curling fans are curious about whether the curling group will consider streaming the full Slam events online, which has been kind of a point of contention with a lot of fans over the years with Sportsnet when it comes to the Slams.
I hear them and I agree with them. Right. We're 3 days into our journey, but that is a priority. We want to make sure that as many curling games, as many sheets, as many events people want to see can be accessed and can be watched wherever they are, regardless whether they're in Canada or they're in Korea. Right. So that's job one. We need to figure out a way to efficiently provide access to the content that the curling fans want. So I hear you loud and clear, and that's a priority, 100%.
I mean, from our discussion so far, Nick, I think I know the answer to this next question, but is it safe to assume that the Grand Slam of Curling will be hosting events internationally in the coming years?
1,000,000,000%, yes. Now, it might not happen next season. I will guarantee there will be a slam, at least one, outside Canada the season after next. It has to happen, right? Not 100% where yet, obviously. And it's not just slams, right? We have plans of potentially producing other amazing curling events, that will travel, put it that way. So, the slams is just property one, so to speak, of our plan. But yeah, we will bring the slams on the road outside Canada as quickly as we can. You can mark my words.
Scheduling has been an issue in curling for several years now, Nick. Seeing as how the Curling Group has purchased the Grand Slam of Curling, and you've just hinted at other properties you are planning on developing, have you reached out to the World Curling Federation, Curling Canada, and the organizers of existing tour events so that work can be done on developing a consistent schedule that would not only help the players in planning their seasons, but also help develop and maintain that new audience with consistent scheduling from year to year?
Yes. I mean, your answer is, or your question is bang on. And you know, I've already had conversations with Nolan. You know, the folks of the World Curling Federation reached out to me this week, and we're planning on talking next week. The conversations are going to start. They're going to start now. It's not just scheduling. It's everything, right? And I agree with you. That type of change, will probably take some time, but I mean, let's face it. There's an amazing opportunity to kind of start fresh, coming in 2 years, right? The curling world still kind of rotates around the Olympic calendar, right? Everybody kind of works and thinks and builds towards Winter Olympics. And they've had to up until now. And with that comes a lot of excitement because we know what happens to the world of curling every 4 years. And we know in 2 years, curling is going to blow up as it always does. But it also gives us an opportunity at that point to start afresh, perhaps, you know, to have a really strong look at what curling, the international curling world looks like post Italy 26. That seems to be a very logical start point for call it to curling 2.0 internationally. But again, like we have to have those conversations. We have to see if we can get on the same page and we have to work together, right? Because, in order for this sport to really grow, we all have to do it together. So yeah, I there's probably going to be some hard conversations, and I'm not against, I'm not afraid of those, and I'm looking forward to getting to know some of the other international curling folks, and working it through, because my group and I have some really strong ideas where we think the sport should go, and yeah, it may not align with everything that has been done over the past decades, but I mean, let's face it. Curling needs a change, man, right? And we want to help spark that change. And, if hard conversations have to happen, so be it, right? But we're all in this together.
And finally, Nick, when you and I sit down 5 years from now to discuss the evolution of the Slams under the guidance of the Curling Group, what might that look like?
That is a very big question. And I will say some of the ideas that I have that I'd like to see come to fruition. If I were to say them right now, I think people might get scared because there's going to be change in my mind. Right. And scared, not like, oh my God, what's going to happen. But like, I think we need a seismic shift in how the sport is structured. But from a specific perspective, and I said this, and this is my goal. I want to sit down with you in 5 years, 6 years, and I want to celebrate the fact that curlers are now treated like, paid like, respected like elite professional at like the other elite professional athletes all over the world, right? I want there to be a star system. I want to see curlers in lots of commercials, not just Brad in a Montana spot. I want more for them, and what the sport will look like. Well, I want to see major curling events all over the world. I want to see energetic barns and curling facilities with ruckus crowds. I want to see the Waste Management Open of curling happen. I'm a massive wrestling fan. I want to see real in-venue energy. I want to see it all. And that's what I want to see 5-6 years from now. What the specific structure of the Slams are going to look like? Well, we'll see. And again, I got to, before we can start instituting some of the changes we want to spark, got to really get to work with the curlers and hear what they want, because they know more about this sport than I do. They've probably had ideas about this sport that are way more aggressive than I've had and my team has had. So what that looks like 5 years from now, well, I don't really know, but I know what I want to see from a macro perspective. So I think it's going to be a pretty exciting run, man.
So 5 years from now, when you and I sit down, Nick, I'll be able to ask you if you finished your story. See what I did there?
Not only have I got it, but so I took the morning off from the slams and this morning, and this is a true story. I think I'm actually going to, I was thinking about that this morning. And you know what I did this morning? I rewatched the final match at WrestleMania 40 because it was the greatest. It was the greatest match in the history of wrestling. And to quote you, Cody Rhodes finished his story and now we get to start our own.
My next guest this week is Mark Kennedy, a veteran of the slam circuit who has won 17 slam titles in his career. Please note that Mark joined me to discuss the Curling Group's purchase of the slam events prior to the announcement that he, Brett Gallant, and Ben Hebert were splitting with Brendan Botcher. That's why you'll not hear Mark and I discussing the Team Botcher announcement in our conversation. So, Mark, there was some big news in the sport of curling recently with the announcement that a new entity called the Curling Group had purchased the Grand Slam of Curling from Sportsnet. The group is led by Nick Solsky, a gentleman that you dealt with when he was at PointsBet, which was one of the companies that was sponsoring your team. What can curling fans, from what you know of him, what can curling fans expect from Nick Solsky as the leader and at least so far the face of the Curling Group?
Yeah, it was. I think it was very exciting news for a lot of the curlers, especially those that know Nick. Nick is first of all, he's a wonderful guy and very, you know, very genuine guy. He's been a wonderful partner of Team Botcher for a few years now, and he's very passionate. You know, he's a big ideas guy. I think he saw curling and its potential, and that there was an opportunity there. And I think he's the type of guy that once he gets an idea, he likes to run with it. He likes to take a few risks. But he's got a good relationship with a lot of the curlers. And most importantly, like I mentioned, he's very passionate. So I think he has goals and plans to grow the sport and, you know, perhaps take it a little bit more international and try to bring some more revenue into the slams and really just give it a facelift and a refreshing new vibe. And you know what, the one thing Nick brings with them and including the other people that are in his executive group is they have a lot of experience. You know, this isn't their first time taking a business and trying to grow it and finding new revenue streams. And so not only is there passion there, but there's also a lot of experience. And I think, you know, we've been through this type of thing in the past as players, but there's been some hesitation because we didn't really know the group that was either purchasing the events or but in this case I think it's more excitement and looking forward to seeing what Nick and his group can do for the Grand Slam of Curling.
I'm curious to know, Mark, if the Curling Group has reached out to you and other players to ask for your thoughts and insights on what the curlers would like to see in a revamped vision for the slams.
That's the other thing with Nick is he's very, you know, there's some transparency there and he wants to be front and center, but wants to have access to the curlers and he wants to build that relationship where he's taking our input and our ideas. So I think that was one of the first things he did. You know, I know he consulted with John Morris and he's been in contact with Ben Hebert and he's there. He's been there all week again and just kind of an open door policy, like come and talk to me. I want to know what you guys are thinking and what you want to do. You know, he's not going to be the CEO that's kind of behind a closed door that you're not going to have access to. So that's a great quality that Nick has. And I'm sure he's gotten a lot of input and probably to your point, right from the beginning of the, when he probably started getting these ideas, I think he reached out to some curlers and was like, you know, do you think this is a good idea if I was to get involved and this is what I'm thinking of doing? And so I know he got some good feedback from certain people and obviously the feedback that encouraged him to keep moving forward with the sale. I've shared some messages with Nick here and there. I think he's really trying to build a rapport with the players and also build their trust so that we will go along this journey with him and do everything we can to help grow the sport.
From your perspective, Mark, what changes or tweaks would you like to see made to the slams as they transition into this new era?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question, Frank, because I think in the past, we've tried to make some changes to the game itself. You know, we've tried to make some changes to, you know, whether it's rules and kind of that would bring some more viewership or that would increase the eyes on the sport. But honestly, and this is where Nick's going, is that's not the answer to getting more people to watch the Grand Slam of Curling. The answer isn't similar to what other sports have done, which is to sell the star power that's in front of you. Like, curlers are very unique athletes, very unique personalities, and we don't really do enough to promote those individual athletes and stars. You know, you look like a, you look at a sport like F1, you look at what the Netflix show brought to that, and how people follow certain racers now. And it just, you know, it got amplified 1,000 times by selling the personalities and the people involved. And I know that's been talked about before in curling, but I don't know if we've ever really had the means or the ability to do that in a very effective way. And I think one of Nick's ideas is to focus a little bit more on that star power and, you know, creating some rivalries and getting some people, you know, loving certain curlers and maybe disliking other curlers. So that's step one. And two, you know, we need to increase the revenue into the game. We need to increase the money into the sport. And the only way to do that is to start going to different markets, not just the Canadian market. So I know that's been on the table a long time. You know, I think they tried to get down to the U.S. for a slam, but COVID got in the way. But, you know, there's big markets for curling in Asia, getting over to Europe and just giving more exposure around the world. That's how the game is going to grow exponentially. So I think Nick has some plans of doing that over the next few years. And, you know, those are the answers, I believe.
Now, Nick has spoken about wanting to broaden the fan base for the sport, Mark, by drawing in people from more varied demographic groups than the sport currently draws. One of the keys is certainly going to be the involvement of teams and individual players promoting the sport on different media platforms, which, to be honest, has not been a strength of most curlers over the years, with the bulk of the content consisting mostly of static game results, sponsor shoutouts, and upcoming events, which does little to help new fans get to know the players. Do you anticipate the teams and individual curlers playing a bigger role on different media and social platforms moving forward if you're going to take advantage of these new opportunities created by the curling group and this new era of the slams?
Yeah, I think you're right about that. It's an interesting one. The players definitely could learn to do that a little bit better. There are some that do it quite well, and others like myself that kind of stay away from it, maybe just being a little bit older as well. Maybe that's something more for the younger crowd. But yeah, there's definitely something there, Frank. I think often, though, and maybe this is where Nick and the curling group come in, is that lots of people could probably use some guidance on exactly how to do that. And I've always been, you know, only speaking from personal experience, I find some of that stuff to be, like, it can be taxing for us to do that, you know, day in and day out, self-promoting, you know, trying to get more eyes on you and the team. We have so many other things to focus on when it comes to, you know, performing and putting a team together and running the business that is a curling team in order to be successful and, you know, putting the time and energy into all the things that go into creating a successful team, over and above the fact that once we're off the ice and we go home, we all have young families and we're busy with just the day-to-day grind of, you know, school drop-offs and groceries and working and all that stuff. So that adds a whole other layer to trying to grow ourselves and our sport. And then that's tough. Some have done it really well, and yeah, maybe some guidance from the curling group on exactly how they would want us to do that if they're going to be focusing on certain star players. But you're right, it's definitely another avenue where we can get younger, new people watching the game through, you know, be it TikTok or Snapchat or Twitter or Facebook, whatever the means. It would definitely help.
I mean, to be fair, though, Mark, social media has almost been an afterthought for a lot of the teams over the past several years. And I guess what I'm saying is that an effort could be made. I know that everybody is busy during the season, but most teams get together during the summer for team bonding and planning weekends. And all they would need to do is add an extra day on those weekends to record TikToks and Instagram posts that could be used at different points during the season. I mean, Team Botcher killed it this recent season with your Christmas video, and some other teams do good creative stuff, but for the most part, to be perfectly honest, it's mostly game results, sponsor shoutouts, and thank you to organizers of an event after the fact, and that repetitive stuff has little to no creativity, and that's not what is going to add to additional visibility for a team or for the sport on social platforms.
I'll be completely honest with you. You're not wrong about that. But even everything that you just said, like when you guys get together in the summer, like literally as a group right now, we have one day planned to get together.
Oh, there you go.
To golf. We've got, you know, Benny's coaching a ball team and I've got 11 straight weekends of triathlon and swimming. That kind of goes back to that point where you're right. You're absolutely right about what teams can or need to do. But it does take planning, and it does take, you know, our Christmas video got over 200,000 views. It was amazing. Yeah. But it was, we booked a studio.
Yeah,
it was a four-hour process to go and meet the guy and do takes. And so it's not just a 5-minute, you're right. But it takes time. It takes planning. It takes effort.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, you're kind of looking at it. Well, how much did that add to the big scheme of things when it comes to-
I hear what you're saying, Mark, and sure, there is a virality component on platforms such as TikTok where a single post can send an account into the stratosphere, but the most important thing is consistency, and for the most part, the social media accounts for most teams and most individual players are very inconsistent, and that's due in part to the fact that teams don't have a regular schedule, so you're playing perhaps events on consecutive weekends, then maybe 3 weekends without an event, and most of the posting that gets done by curlers and their teams are event updates, scores from games, sponsor shoutouts, and thank yous after an event is over. But that's not going to allow anybody to be consistent. You've got to be in front of people, in front of your followers, almost day in and day out with content that, in large part, you can create in batches. And I think that's something that very few of the curling teams or individual players do right now. And finally, Mark, there's been an exodus of young, talented curlers in Canada over the past 12 months, especially on the women's side with Mackenzie Zacharias, Skylar Ackerman, and Megan Walter, among others, all deciding to step away from the sport to focus on their studies or to pursue other passions. Should that be a concern to the Canadian curling community, Mark? Because here are young, talented players stepping away from the sport at a time where they should be at the very beginning of the prime of their careers.
Oh, it's absolutely a concern. We have so many young, talented curlers that just, they don't really have an avenue to keep playing competitively at a certain point in their young careers. You know, you get to those early 20s when you're either just finishing up university and you got to start looking at a career, and you know, you can't really find a career that balances curling life these days because you have to commit so much time and energy and effort to the curling. So then you end up having to make a choice, and really the sane logical choice is to go find a good paying job and have a career. So because curling, there's no guarantees, especially these days with how high a level the play is. So it is a massive concern. You know, I know an example last week, like the Best of the West event, the U25 gets a lot of teams going to those types of things. You know, I know there's been discussions about just building a little bit of a tour for those younger players to continue to play so that we don't lose them right in those critical years of the early 20s, because there's very few that get that opportunity, you know, like a Tyler Tardy or a Jacques Gauthier to get recruited by a Kevin Cooey and learn at the slams in their early 20s. That's how I got into it. But those opportunities are just few and far between these days. So yeah, Frank, it's absolutely a concern. I don't necessarily have the answers, but I would love to see those talented curlers still remain in the game at a fairly high level one way or another while they are trying to begin their careers. Or, you know, to the our earlier point and with what Nick and the curling group are saying, like, we want to bring enough money into the game where you can make a living out of it. And not just the top teams making a living out of it, but similar to other sports like tennis and golf, where, you know, you could be the 13th ranked team in the world and still be making enough money to pay the bills. You know, that would be the ultimate end goal. I'm not sure when or how we can get there, but certainly a concern, and we don't have the answers, but it's a little bit scary that so many young players are leaving the game.
And that does it for this week's episode. A huge thank you to Nick and Mark for joining me this week. Also, don't forget to check out our partners and friends in the Curling Podcast Network, the Two Girls in the Game Podcast, the Rock Logic Podcast, and the Curling Legends Podcast. I'm Frank Rock, and you're listening to the From the Hack Curling Podcast, part of the Curling News and Curling Podcast Network partnership.